Board of Trustees to order. Dr. Pijus.
Heavenly Father, we come before you with gratitude and the opportunity to serve. Thank you for the continued dedication and hard work of our faculty and staff, especially during these summer months, as they support and uplift our students with unwavering commitment. We ask for your guidance as we plan and lead, and pray for your continued growth in our enrollment so that more lives may be transformed through education. Grant us wisdom, unity, and a spirit of service in all that we do. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Label.
Do we have any public comment?
We do have public comment.
Okay.
Professor Reed would like to make public comments.
All righty. Thank you. Professor Reed.
This is the first time I've done a public comment. Jason Reed, 3409 47th Street West, Bradenton, Florida. I just wanted to come here and say thank you to the board members for your support of FBLA, Future Business Leaders of America. A couple months ago, we came to you guys asking for support and help to go to our national conference. We went last month in June. Unfortunately, we did not place in any of the events. Florida actually didn't do very well at all. Nebraska and California kind of, I know, took a lot of the accolades. But the students learned a lot. They've already met twice over the summer to kind of to figure out how they're going to improve moving into next year. Next year's nationals is going to be in Las Vegas. So I'm sure we'll be coming back to the board probably next year asking for some more money. But other highlights at FBLA, both the Venice chapter and the Bradenton chapter both placed second and third in the national stock market game that we participated in. And hopefully we're going to put out a press release on that. Good things are happening, and I want to say thank you to you guys for your support.
Thank you. All right, President's report.
Thank you, Chairman. Board members, we have a packed agenda today, so I'll try to be quick with my part, but there is a lot to talk about. I won't go through the community context. They remain heavy and frequent as usual and as required. But I do want to highlight three things right at the beginning. One, you can see it on your presidential report that through the great work of our athletic director, we pursued, and I think we've already briefed you on this, that we received a grant so that we could kickstart a Division II intercollegiate men and women's cross-country team. So we're very excited about that in the fall. And then two other things I just want to bring to your attention. One, and Julie's going to brief this a little more in depth, but I just want to highlight that our staff, our employees have done a tremendous amount of work responding to DOGE requests from the governor's DOGE team. I'm talking nights and weekends and all sorts of additional hours from a number of employees, but I want to highlight a few of them here. That Aaron Montgomery, AVP and controller, who's in the back of the room. The other Roberta Reed, the other Reed, member of our employee team, who's leaving her post as assistant controller and going over to the faculty side. Janet Shoup, senior accountant. Maria Ontiveros from payroll. Liberty Huggins from accounts payable, and Madeline Pazuda, an HR specialist. That team and many others, Julie has the specific numbers, but it's north of 500 hours of additional man hours that they had to perform responding to these DOGE requests. So I'm just very, very thankful for the dedication of those employees. And speaking of Julie, the other thing I want to highlight at the beginning is how thankful I am and the entire cabinet and the entire college community for 41 years of service to higher education. This is her last Board of Trustees meeting. We still have her for about another month and a half, so we're thrilled that we get to hold on to her for a little while longer. But Julie, what a tremendous honor it's been to work with you. Thank you for what you've done for this college and for other colleges around the country. Great job.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we have a presentation, dual enrollment, early college, by Heather Seahorn. I just want to automatically say doctor before it, all these names, but it doesn't say doctor on here.
You can't go wrong.
Okay, you organize.
It's almost there.
Almost there, gotcha, all right.
Good evening.
Good evening.
As you mentioned, I'm Heather Seahorn, I serve as dean for academic success in early college program. Thank you so much for having us this evening. I did bring along a couple of folks with me, if you don't mind, to include Callie Garrettson in the back, who's our program director for early college. And then I've also brought along two of our students who have graduated with us that are happy to tell their stories to us this evening, and that's Darius Lee and Laura Halsey. So thank you so much for being here with us this evening. So a little bit about early college programs. We have some guidance from the state of Florida that gives us some edge on what this looks like. And basically the state says that we need to be able to offer college coursework to our high school students along with the potential of earning the associate degree in arts. We do this very, very well through our collegiate schools, so Kelly Minot is in the back, both at Bradenton and Venice. But we also do this through articulation agreements with our public schools in the local area. We must be within our geographical location, so we can't push out to other areas within the state. But our focus is on Sarasota County Schools. We have articulation with Charlotte County Schools, specifically the Lemon Bay School District. And also, if you would please approve the Manatee County School agreement that's in your packet this evening. In addition, we partner with 18 private schools. You should have a handout, yeah, there, a little header there, that highlights all of the schools that we are partnered with. In addition to working with families in Sarasota and Manatee County Schools, or Manatee County students, for homeschool education, along with the personalized education plan, PEP. So PEP came out of a House bill in 2023 that allows families to develop customized plans to specifically meet the needs of their students, their unique needs of their students. With PEP, there is a funding source tied to them for, it's under the Florida Tax Credit Scholarship. So they have additional funding source out of what you do this evening. Out of that, we have 86% of our students come from public schools. That's no surprise to us in the office. In addition, 10% come from homeschool education, and the other 4% come from those private schools that we articulate with. So a little bit about the programs that we offer within early college. I like to call that like an umbrella term. We offer dual enrollment, which kind of is the standard language. Oh, it's dual enrollment, dual enrollment. It's actually the umbrella of early college, with dual enrollment being the part-time program. This allows grades 6 through 12 to participate in a part-time program up to 11 credit hours per semester, fall and spring. This represents 63% of our enrollment. We also offer an early admissions program, which is a full-time program for our qualified seniors, so seniors in high school. Those students can take up to 15 credit hours in a fall and spring. This represents about 23% of our population. And then our accelerated dual enrollment, which is our full-time dual enrollment program, allowing for students beginning in their junior year, public school students, to participate full-time and to earn the associate degree in arts. We've seen an increase in these numbers, still sitting about 14% of our overall enrollment. So, can these students take classes at any of our campuses? Absolutely. They can take classes in Bradenton and Venice, online, soon to be Parrish. In addition, we allow these students to select any instructional modality, so face-to-face, online, hybrid, and our go-live option as well. So speaking of go-live, with that program, we're working with Sarasota County Schools to offer some go-live courses. So basically streaming to two select high schools for students in their freshman and sophomore years, and then those students will be with us full-time their junior and senior year. So what does it take to get into an early college program? high school GPA. So it is right there. I would want to see any student that has a 3.0 consider coming into the program. We do require qualifying test scores. So what tests are these, you may ask? SAT, ACT, PERT, AccuPlacer, and even the classic learning test. We do have a threshold for entrance, and that is designated by the state of Florida under the computation and communication rule that governs that. Students complete a contract for entrance into the early college program. They select their type of dual enrollment, so if they want to do part-time, full-time, or that accelerated option, and then we ask that they select a pathway. So we were one of the first in dual enrollment to create pathways throughout the state, and so that's what we've done here. So we allow students to select kind of guardrails as a general path, a STEM path, or a business path.
Heather, are these requirements the same as the collegiate school requirements in terms of GPA and qualifying test scores?
So Kelly, do you want to answer on the our qualifying test scores are the same. Our GPA is the same. Do you have any accelerated GPA requirements?
We do for 10th grade. So if the students are in 10th grade and they're taking the class online, then they have to have a higher GPA. But those are the same.
So with we have an early college contract, and the collegiate school handles it a little differently as far as their process into the high school or their lottery system. But on our side with our early college contracts, we ask that the student initiate that process with us. They select the type of dual enrollment, they select the pathway, and then from there it's electronic, so it gets sent over to their parents along with their counselors to determine eligibility. And the big thing is that we want to make sure that they're ready for that next level of education. And then once they have completed the contract, they proceed to registration. All of this is outlined on our early college website, if you can't sleep tonight. The step-by-step of instructions on how to get started. We have two deadlines each year, May the 15th for the summer and the fall, and December the 1st for the spring semester. So the question that I was asked last week is this program whole? And in that, Florida students do not have to pay tuition and fees and instructional materials. And I can answer that at this moment, that yes, the program is whole, in that we charge the public schools for the tuition, and the public schools pick up the instructional materials cost. As far as the private schools, PEP students, and homeschool students, we bill the state of Florida under the dual enrollment scholarship fund. Thank you, Erin. So headcount. This program continues to grow every year. You may have heard back in the day that, oh gosh, the collegiate school and early college is holding enrollment. And that was because our enrollment continued to increase while we saw some of our lower level enrollment struggle, right? Fortunately, it looks like we're starting to come out of that lower level enrollment issue, right? Making some good strides for enrollment numbers.
Oh, yeah.
And the same thing is true with early college. So I've given you the last 3 years worth of data, and when we look at this is unduplicated. So it's number of heads, right? So 989 students came through in 2025. Thank you, Dr. Hale, to your team for helping with pulling up this incredible data this evening. The team's awesome. Also, we looked at load hours. In early college, load hours aren't nearly as important to us as headcount, right? So we want to make sure that students are balancing their high school curriculum and college curriculum together so they're not overloading themselves and then putting themselves in a deficit. Because the idea is that we want to make sure that they're major and transfer ready for the next level institution. And a student wants to make sure that they're prepared to sit at the junior level.
So in the previous graph, you showed a stair step up, 813 to 849, but the load hours went down.
So yes, and it cut off, so I apologize, but in 2024, we did see a dip in load hours. But that was because we were focusing heavily on enrollment versus asking students to take more courses, right? And now what we have seen is the headcount has increased, so therefore our load hours are increasing. The other thing that I'm seeing as a trend is that we may see more full-time early admission students and accelerated dual enrollment students as we move forward as well.
Do public school kids have choices, or is it this is the only choice for dual enrollment for them?
as far as they have lots of choices, right? So they can consider Kelly's collegiate school program, and then our early college, we offer the three. But the other thing that our high school students have the opportunity to choose from is what sort of accelerated mechanism do they want to participate in? Do they want to go into an ACE program, an AP program, an IB program, or select to do college coursework while they're still in high school?
Explain to me, if you're going to do that anyway, just tell me how shall a child, a student who wants to do this, they go to high school part of the day and come here part of the day? Is that how it happens?
Yes, yes. So for the part-time dual enrollment program, we allow students to take up to 11 credit hours a semester. So what we usually see is a student will start their day at the high school, 7:30 right and early, and then the high school kicks them loose after what third period is 10:40 or so to get to their classes.
So the classes that if they were on campus in the high school that they normally would take, they won't take it, but they'll take an accelerated courses here. So the high school is accepting our grades, I guess, for their GPA. Is that correct?
Yes. Actually, with dual enrollment, they're required to take that credit in as honors credit, so it's weighted higher as well. So our headcount, you know, when we look at this slide, this is a snapshot in time based on this time last year to today, well, last week. So we are up. We are up with our first-time early college students, our continuing early college students, along with the amount of load hours that we're taking. So the fall semester is looking very healthy for this program.
And if, I'm curious, but I want to make sure I understand.
Sure.
In the public talk. So a family who puts their child through this, a family, mm-hmm. they don't pay any extra money.
They do not pay anything.
Unless you're in a private school, then you pay tuition, is that correct? Or they bill the state for that?
We bill the state for
so
the dual enrollment.
No child that's in this program pays more money to be here.
No Florida student will pay for dual enrollment, early admissions, accelerated dual enrollment. And whether they attend a public school, whether they are a homeschooled student, a personalized education plan student, or a private school student.
Yeah, thank you.
It's a really nice deal. The state of Florida has done a fantastic job building in the dual enrollment program and funding it. It sits at about $18 million in funding each year.
They only funded everything that time.
Okay, so I have some success stories.
Sure.
I have a couple in the back of the room, so bring up. If you want to come up while I tell about a couple of success stories. So I'll start with two. Actually, thank you, Callie, for reaching out to our students. We had a couple of students respond back, said, hey, tell us about your success stories. So two from dual enrollment. One gentleman just graduated with his bachelor's degree from Emory-Riddle in aerospace and physiology, with a minor in chemistry and psychology.
Wow.
He is a research assistant in immunology at John Hopkins Hospital in St. Pete. Okay. Dual enrollment student. Had another student that said, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that you're asking me about my story. I was a double major at USF Tampa in business in both marketing and computer science and data analytics. I was accepted onto a graduate program at Wake Forest, but I just landed my dream job as a project management analyst, right? Dual enrollment. Then I have to tell you a little bit of story. I think, Laura, you may know Sydney. Okay, so Sydney Hansen was a Venice High student. She participated in our accelerated dual enrollment program, wanted to work towards forensic science. Actually forensic science, not just the TV show within the first hour, you know, the results of it. She was very interested. You want the lab part, right? She said, absolutely. She transitioned to Florida Gulf Coast University, earned her bachelor's degree in forensic science, did undergraduate research. We know that that's really important to the undergraduate studies these days, and then transitioned over to Sam Houston State University, the graduate degree in forensic science. She's two times published already, impressive, and just admitted to a PhD program at Sam Houston State. Then Ms. Liliana Mott, do you guys know Liliana? So Liliana was attended Palmetto High School, and to your question, Liliana participated in ACE. She participated in advanced placement in her high school, and then her senior year, full-time, she was with us for early admission. Right? So she graduated with her AA degree as well, a little bit of a different shift as what we see with Kelly's program with that traditional ABE program, but she also graduated with her AA degree. And she joined our student services team in September of 22. We adore her. She is our coordinator for enrollment services. She wanted to be here. She apologized that she couldn't be here, but gosh, talk about a wonderful story. And she's paying it forward with meeting with our students and making those meaningful connections. All right, then there's these two. I'll start with Darius. So Darius graduated from Venice High School in spring of 23. And he also did our accelerated dual enrollment program. It's not on the slide, but Darius has a 4.0. Now, if you notice, it says civil engineering. So that means with us, he took calculus 1, 2, 3, physics with calculus 1, 2, and still maintained a 4.0. And has continued to do that at the University of Florida, where he was admitted as a freshman. Being admitted as a freshman, he's in our Florida Bright Futures. Now I'm getting a little... And by being a student at UF in engineering, they're paying him. Little did he know that they would give him a scholarship that he didn't apply for engineering. What's awesome about Darius is Darius is doing an internship. Oh, wait a second. I'm going to go back a second. In spring of 25, if you've read the slide, he was one of the designers for the Concrete Canoe Club at UF. So you might want to ask them a couple of questions about that. That did take the national title alongside basketball. Okay. What's neat about Darius is he has secured a full-time internship this summer in Sarasota County. Thank you to your employer for letting you come this evening, cut me loose a little bit to be here. And he's working on plans in Welland Park, and he's from that south in Sarasota County area. It's his plan to finish his bachelor's degree in spring and return back to our area to work.
Wonderful.
And then there's Laura Halsey. Laura is a graduate from Sarasota Military Academy. So this is a public school charter within Sarasota County Schools. That's obviously dual enrollment affiliated. And while she was a student with us, she learned very quickly to spend time in the Academic Resource Center and the Tutoring and Success Center. And that was her stomping ground. Any time you wanted to find Laura, she was in the task. And folks followed her, right? Because they wanted to be like Laura. Everybody wanted to be like Laura because she knew how to study. And they wanted to learn how to study the way she did. She's very, very humble, but she's very, very brilliant. She graduated with her AA degree and then transitioned to the University of South Florida Tampa campus for a bachelor's degree in health science with a biological concentration and a minor in nutrition. Okay? All the while volunteering with Suicide Hotline, logging hundreds of hours. Also, she works as a medical scribe for Sarasota Memorial Healthcare Systems in their ER. So she works on the floor at Venice and the Sarasota campuses. Of course, Laura, she has a lot of time on her hands, right? So she also jumped into a research assistant position with Tampa General in their OBGYN department. Laura's preparing when she's not on TikTok. She's preparing for med school, so she's taking the MCAT in just a couple of weeks. And her life goal at this point is to be an ER physician. So these are the stories. This is the incredible work that our faculty and our staff are doing in the early college. I would like to definitely open it up to questions of the program or our students.
Ms. Halsey, can I give you my card? And I'd love to introduce you to the FSU College of Medicine that has a Sarasota campus. I'm on the advisory board. Sounds like somebody we would love to have.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yes.
Or you can go to a good college at the University
Garnet and gold looks so much better. But you
the
could
black and gold in Orlando we can talk about, too.
But then she can come back here and do a residency in ER at Sarasota Memorial Hospital with Dr. Temple.
Or you can go to Med Memorial.
All right, should we open the bidding yet?
Also a huge fan of SMA as well. My sister's on that board.
Oh, nice. How do you keep a canoe that's made out of
concrete? It's really all into our mix and our whole design. So basically, it looks, if you were to go see our canoe, you wouldn't even know that it's concrete. It's 3/8 of an inch thick, and it's shaped like a typical canoe that you would picture. And because of our light mix design and that, it's able to float just like any other canoe.
It's a composite concrete.
Yeah, when I first started working on it, like, the mix is so light, like, it's not like a typical concrete mix. So, yeah. Typically, when I tell people that, they picture, like, a really thick, like, giant gray, heavy, like, boat. Our boat was, I want to say, over 20 feet long this year, and it was less than 200 pounds.
But isn't it true that during World War II, they did make some cargo ships out of concrete?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. I think it is.
Google it.
Actually, with this year's mix design, they were so confident in our boat that they didn't even want to add bulkheads, which typically in our boats you have bulkheads on the front and the back, and usually it's like a styrofoam to increase the floating capability, but they were so confident that they actually didn't even need it. We still added them just for factors of safety, but the mix itself was like less dense than water, so.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Heather. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Notice the garnet on the card as well.
I had a multitasking going on. All right. Next is the approval of non-financial consent agenda. Please note that we have a revised agenda with one added, Exhibit KK. Fortunately, we don't need a third revised one. So does anybody need to remove anything from this?
Can we pull F and G?
Well, yes, we can. Anybody else? Is there a motion to approve the remainder without F and G?
Second.
There was a motion second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion passes. Taylor? Yeah.
Okay, let's make sure. Okay, so on page 69, I just had a question on the evidence-based reading plan under section A, and forgive me if I'm a dunce and not reading this correctly. If the goals for the plan year should increase from the previous year in order to meet statewide literacy achievement goals. I don't understand why, and I only went to Florida State, so that may be why the levels 3 to 5 actually go down in a lot of places for the goal for the plan year. So, example, previous school year, level 3 through 5, 87%, am I reading that right? 87% of our population was at the FAST scores 3 to 5. Mm-hmm. But then our goal for this year is 82%. Shouldn't it be 88%? Or am I misreading that?
I think our levels were so high this year, especially compared to, public schools across the county, that we just decided. I mean,
does that get us out of compliance?
Yes. That's what I'm about to do right now. Because the scores are so high, to put that pressure on the teachers to have to be achievement level for our students from the district from the top to the school.
And
we give them ABC and C.
And then why in grade 8 do we have such a huge drop? I mean, usually you'd see the drop from 8 to 9 because there's that huge difference between 8th grade and high school. But why was there a drop in 8th grade?
8th grade was a very special cohort this year. We have only 67 to 75 students in each grade. So when you're feeling about just that, it's just going to be a couple of students.
Oh, interesting.
That might change the future.
Okay.
And I think back to your question about the, in order to stay in compliance, the goals have to be higher than the goals last year, but not higher than the performance from last year.
So in terms of, like, number of students?
As a percentage.
Yeah.
That last line you were referencing,
yeah,
goals for the plan year must increase.
We also use our charter application as a baseline, which is at 75%.
Okay.
So for the counties, for our accreditation, it's at 75%, that's really what we're looking for.
All right, so obviously we're doing well, except for 8th grade. We're kind of right on the bubble.
Yeah, plan a couple students.
Yeah.
Very special cohort.
Let's get rid of
those
guys.
Well, I mean, at that point, then you're kind of like, are they usually the cohorts that go 6th, 7th, and then 8th, or is it the ones that just come in the 8th grade here where it could have?
So it's interesting because since we're a lottery, all the students that apply.
So it could be.
It's really different every year. I mean, the 10th grade group is an amazingly overachieving group this year that we have working on all the time. So it's just kind of ebbs and flows depending on really the record as well.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not sure what that means.
Yeah.
And that we were still in compliance.
We're in compliance.
Okay.
You want to do G and then we can go down them together?
The two things on G was one in the actual explanation. I was curious why Bradenton was still pending in terms of dollar amount for allocation.
We just got the allocation today.
Oh, that would be why. Okay. And then the other issue on the mental health application, I would really, and this obviously doesn't need to change now because obviously it looks like everything is in compliance. But I was reading through the bullet items somewhere in a section somewhere where it talks about parents of students receiving, on page 99, parents of students receiving services are provided information about other behavioral health services. I don't see a specific bullet or policy on the notification of parental involvement for mental health issues that are found in the students. As a parent, I assume we all would like to be informed if the school is seeing something that, you know, we might not see at home. That's like my biggest fear because I'm a working parent. Are they seeing something that I don't see? And I know that is kind of controversial now at this point because there are different mental health issues that are in this generation more so than they were in mine. But I would love to see a policy where we mention that parents will be notified within a certain time period. I think California or somewhere was looking for 48 hours, which obviously I don't recommend, but something like that, because all it does is in here it seems like there's some assumption that the parents know about it. And, you know, like that they know they're receiving services, and oftentimes parents may not if they're not paying attention or if they're working three jobs, things like that. That would just be my two cents and my comments, that I would like to see more a policy regarding notification of parents regarding services that are being provided to the student.
Minor student, you mean?
Yeah, a lot of these cases are, it's usually junior, senior year, but, you know, juniors, they're still minors. So, yeah.
Yeah.
There's some new legislation with parents' bill of rights, and we do have to make sure that we get to, have a conversation
Should that be part of the written policy to say we comply with the state statute of the Parents' Bill of Rights or anything?
Add any part of our narrative? Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
The bullets that come from.
Yeah, these narrative. Look like you just had to check them off
there's
online. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so I mean, I know we're in compliance, but I would love to just take that extra step just for peace of mind.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Agreed. Great.
Other than that, I'm good.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve F and G?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion passes. Approval of financial consent agenda items. Anybody need to remove any? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion passes. Skipping facilities list. And on to Chris Wellman, facilities construction project updates.
Several items for this evening, and I'm going to ask for a little help from Rebecca. I'm going to go ahead and discuss the deferred maintenance priority projects, the nursing auditorium renovation contract approval. Rebecca will present via the landscape maintenance. The disaster recovery remediation, I'm going to discuss as new business. And Rebecca's going to give you a big status update on where we're at on. This was all her from recovery. If you don't know Rebecca Furter, she's the director of business services. She does an outstanding job of overseeing our procurement purchasing for the college. She oversees our food service contracts, our bookstore contracts, our risk management contracts, central services functions, and the new auditorium venue. And then she has a whole bunch of other duties at this time. So I've got four projects looking for project approval on. Each of these have a budget of over $150,000. They are all deferred maintenance projects. They're either addressing aged equipment or building components that's in its useful life. We got the first one, building 19 Friedman School. That's replacing 7 air handlers of the 9 air handlers and associated equipment with it. The $600,000 budget, we're going to split that between the Friedman School Public Education Capital Outlay Funds and our Capital Reserve. Our second one is building 26 roof replacement. As you know, right now we're replacing all the HVAC rooftop equipment. We'll get that wrapped up this summer. We'll come in next dry season and do a full tear off on that. We're going to go back up with modified bituminous. We put a roof coating on that probably 7 years ago, and we got all the life we're going to get out of that roof. So, and that existing roof is well over 20 years. The third one is the Lathrop Grange Campus HVAC controls upgrade. We are $250,000 as capital reserve. It's just obsolete control system that we need to update. And then the final one is our Howard Theater audio system replacement. Again, a system that's over 20 years, $200,000. Pay that out of CIF. We have adequate budget in all these funds to cover this. So, requesting board approval for these four capital projects as presented.
So, motion to approve?
Motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Are there any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion passes.
The last one I have is the nursing auditorium renovation, looking for contract approval. This is a project that the board previously approved. We did complete design on it, finished the bid documents. We selected Willis Smith to act as a CM. He was one of our on-call CMs that was selected through the Consultant Competitive Negotiation Act per Florida statute. They advertised, they bid out the subcontractor work. The total cost of construction is $511,046. That includes general conditions, some subcontractor costs, overhead, and their profit. SES staff has evaluated those costs and found them to be fair and reasonable. That 511 is within the overall project budget. So based on that, request the board approval to contract with Willis Smith for the 511-46.
Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Are there any questions or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion passes.
Okay.
for board approval is going to be our landscaping maintenance for the Bradenton campus. We opened up our public solicitation earlier this year, and we received multiple bids, of which we evaluated Yellowstone to be the best contract available, as well as the best pricing that we were able to secure. So we are asking for approval for full 3 years plus 2 1-year options for a total contract amount of $1,364,448.
How much was it last year?
So our year one, or I'm sorry, the last year was $247,000, and year one of the new agreement will be $257,000. That's going to be about a 4% increase. And then we've negotiated a 3% annual increase cap on all four, or on all 5 years.
Who's doing it now?
It is Yellowstone.
Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
A second?
Second.
Are there any other questions or comments for Rebecca?
Is this a traditional maintenance item in our budget, or is this above and beyond?
Nope, this is our traditional maintenance.
So wasn't that approved with the budget? I'm just curious as to why.
So because it was a public solicitation, all of our public solicitations are required to go to the board of sale approval.
And I'm assuming we've vetted this out?
Yes, they have to.
Like the last project we just saw, we had $750,000 in the board. It turned out to be $500,000.
All right. Any other questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion passes.
Save this one for new business?
Okay.
All right, so now we have our hurricane recovery update. As Chris mentioned, I'm Rebecca Ferda. I'm the Director of Business Services. So not only do I oversee procurement, but I also oversee business services, auxiliary services, and then in this case, I also lead the FEMA application for any of our storm-related major events. So back in October of 2024, the board had authorized us for a $6.0 million authority to spend. That came out of our capital reserves. To date, we've actually only spent about $3.7 million. I realize they say only 3.7, but compared to $6 million, that's a nice little bit that will be coming back to us. We were able to contract with over 28 different vendors in contract, and we were, so we had our 28 vendors in contract. We were able to execute the $3.7 million spending with careful pre-planning, publicly solicited contracts, as well as strong partnerships with our vendors. Our top contracts that we had that were over $325,000 were for Belfor, which was our disaster recovery and mitigation vendor. So they were the first ones on site after the storm to ensure that the campus was safe for our team to enter, as well as there was any incidents such as water intrusion, wind damage, all of that immediate response that's required. The next one we had was Garland Roofing, and they were our contractor who took care of the three repairs that we had for roofs. So this was building 17. The entire roof was damaged due to the wind and the hurricane, and then this picture over on the right is a picture of the repair. So not only did we have building 17, which is our gym, we also had building 11, which is houses the Neal Performing Arts Center. Again, picture on the right is with the repair. And then building 23, which is our operations division building. This one took a little bit more damage than the rest of our campus, but again, Barnum was able to not only provide temporary repairs so that we were watertight, but also as well as our permanent repairs. Next, we contracted with Tandem, and Tandem was able to do quite a bit of projects throughout the campus. Most notably was the rebuild of our athletic, our softball and our baseball field dugouts. So both of these locations, right now you have just a softball field dugout. The storm had actually blown out the walls and tore off the roofs, so these buildings were completely destroyed. Tandem was able to get everything rebuilt, I believe, in time for season to start, or near enough there, so that was very nice. And they're beautiful now compared to the previous structures. They also provided the replacement of the canopy over the Puget School exercise area. If any of you have seen this prior to the repair, the canopy has been completely blown off. It has still yet to be found, so if you see something floating around, it could be our canopy. And then they also provided repairs in our gym. So our entire gym floor has to be completely redone. It was torn out and refinished.
because of the water intrusion as part of that roof damage. And then last but not least, Hannah was able to provide some maintenance and repairs for our sign. So the sign on the left is a brand new marquee that was destroyed in the storm. They were able to replace it, reinstall. Now it's on some great sturdy footers. And then we also had minor repairs to our main marquee located on 26th Street, which included repainting and then some repairs of the actual lettering on there. So.
Question.
Yes, sir.
The canvas top.
The canvas?
Are we able to take that down in case of another hurricane?
That's a good question.
We are. It just becomes a time management with the resources we've got on windscreens and garbage cans and, yeah.
Okay. So if there was some sort of policy, as if the hurricane is in some place or time that we would get the manpower to do it, even if we have to hire it?
Yeah, we
can. That costs a lot of money.
Right.
We
certainly can.
I would think we could take out a box and have a little bit of it, but of the overall hurricane damage, are we 100% done, back up to running?
We're waiting on awnings for the facility building and awnings for the baseball field, and I think windscreens for the tennis courts. Those are items just had crazy lead times on it. So we'll be wrapped up, I think, September. Is that where they're headed?
Yeah. On the money slide, can you go back to it? Okay, so you said our actual costs were 3.7 out of the 6 million we authorized. I also noticed that the reimbursement was 3.7 million. So was that in addition to the actual cost, or have we been made whole based on our actual cost?
So the actual cost is $3.7 million. So after all of the storm happens, after we do our initial response, then it's going into documenting all of the damage that had occurred, as well as the expenses that are taking place, whether it's going to Home Depot to get boots for the guys, or is it securing these GMPs for all of our contractors. So our final cost will be about that $3.7 million, of which we've identified what costs are eligible for insurance reimbursement, as well as what costs are eligible for FEMA reimbursement.
So is that the expectation timeline to be paid, 6 months for insurance?
Correct. So
2 years for FEMA.
Yep, so we were able to secure approval for $2.6 million in reimbursement from our insurance company. Yeah. And we do expect that within the next 6 months. I was just on the phone with them today saying, hey, there's my money. But we should see our second check coming within the next week, actually. So that's going to be a big positive.
So we are going to be made whole.
We are going to be made whole.
For another 2 years.
Potentially. So if anyone's familiar with the FEMA reimbursement process, it is not a timely, speedy process.
People say
insurance.
As we learned,
especially with Ian. So Ian happened back in 2021. We finally received our final payment this year in March, I believe it was, of $400,000. So we estimate about 2 years. Right now, we've submitted $1.1 million worth of costs to FEMA for reimbursement. We're just waiting on the approval queue. It's kind of a lengthy approval process. It goes through multiple projects.
Right? More efficient.
Well, maybe if people are going back to work in D.C., this will be faster now.
Touche.
So while the pictures are great to see that the campus is being brought back to whole, it is important to understand that not only are the repairs happening, but we are also actively seeking those reimbursements so that we are made whole. Those funds that we were able to secure from Capital Reserve, thanks to you guys, will be going back into the Capital Reserve account for future projects, and fingers crossed, knock on wood, hope it doesn't happen future storms. At least storm response. Any questions?
But,
yes.
So, and Chris, I think maybe you have discussed this sometime in the past, but do we not have agreements with maybe Belfar and Garland, like, so that if there is an issue, that it's already an agreement and they're on top of it immediately to try to mitigate any additional damage?
So our new business is to re-up that Belfar emergency response.
We ought to get it done, maybe tonight.
new business is tonight.
Yes. Okay.
And that's exactly what we did, and that's why we were able to get dried in from the roof standpoint and get the water out of the buildings. And we had probably 100 people on that site within the first couple of days.
Yeah. Great.
And it's because of that.
Okay.
Also, to secure FEMA fund or reimbursement, it does help when you have publicly solicited contracts. So Belfour is one of those. We also use our construction management contract as well. So that's why we were able to have such a significant fast response immediately after the storm. And again, that goes back to the vendor partnerships that we've created and have in place in order to allow that to happen.
Thank you. Thank you, Rebecca. Chris? Thank you. All right, next we have Julie. Fabulous operating budget.
Hopefully the easy operating budget. So before I start, I want to add a comment about our donors. Do I have two gas slots? They were in front of that. That's what I was asking. So just so you all know, the governor did create a DOGE committee within the state of Florida we've been responding to. We have met every request for every piece of data. You'll see here that started in February, and we're still working on returning stuff this past Friday. Before I talk a little about resources, I'd like to introduce Dr. Rebecca Caskey. Dr. Caskey led this effort for us and has been doing a fantastic job keeping us out of trouble. Dr. Caskey tells me that 40 employees so far spent 525 hours just on part two of their request. They had 13 employees working nights and weekends, 7 career level employees would take overtime on the most recent request. I actually hired an outside vendor to put together our financials so that we didn't have to do it because the team was pretty exhausted. The next set of requests we just did on Friday included a 10-year look at financials, our annual financials, and the next group we understand is going to be employees, student enrollment, and programs. We were on a call today with the state auditor's office, and they confirmed that's what they understand. So far, I looked at all of our audits for 10 years. Fraud, investments, travel, that was up 9 years. Professional memberships, etc. So, yeah, any questions about what we've been doing and what we will continue to do with Dr. Caskey's leadership. All right, operating budget. We're going to start on page 160 in your book. And I apologize for you having to get a replacement page, but I promise you it will slow us down. You recall last month, we approved the salary schedule and the fee schedule. The salary schedule included a number of level changes, an early proposal on salary increases, and included our health insurance changes, which are mandated by the state. The health insurance changes were effective in January, so we paid a portion of the year this year, and then we'll go in full payment next year. We did not get funding for those changes. There was originally an $80 million item for the state college system, and it got vetoed. So, just as we talked about this, I also want to remind us that our salary adjustment history over time since 2012 has been approximately 15%. Not very much for 10 years, more than 10 years. This year, as you recall, you approved two $2,000 increments, which I understand has been well received. A reminder, as we look at the budget as well, that operating budgets over time, the revenue has increased since in a 10-year period 27%, while expenses have increased 41%. Just that you keep in mind as we go forward.
One question.
Yeah.
In order for us to get $2,000, but we had to cancel a project to replace the computer.
That's correct.
That replacement in the new budget?
It is.
This year.
So, state appropriations, what did we get? We are recurring general revenue is at 33.4. It's at 34.51. That's an increase of $617,000.
22%.
Yeah, not very much. That's on the bottom line, though. In addition, one of the interesting things we got is this $1 million increase for CDL. We are the financial manager for that, but it's not our funds. We do get some rent. Nursing's allotment went down $275,000. We don't know why. We're looking into it, but what our faculty tell me, Dr. Rand, is that we are so high and such good performer, the other schools are coming along and they're eating to that performance base. Is that correct, Dr. Rand?
Yes.
Yeah.
No lights, but doing good.
We're doing a too good job.
We both to raise the base if there's more participation.
So, excitement, then exclusion school, $3.5 million since in the budget, and the last tranche for money for parish, and $9 million since in the budget. So I'd like to share that your president got you $12.5 million plus $617 for recurring. I think that's fantastic.
Yay.
I really obviously wanted a lot more in the recurring, so a lot of work to do there still. And I'll just highlight, you know, talking to the chairman, well, I won't say which one of the chairman of appropriation over the last couple of years said, you know, every college and university has a woe is me story, and they're all true, right? They're all true. They all need more funding. But some more than others, and we know we fall in the some more than others category. The reality this year is the entire college system was successful. Each of the colleges got a small bump in the recurring funding. We did better than some, but there are some big colleges that got the lion's share of it. And I'll tell you two things about that. One is, the larger colleges, when you compare them per student, receive much less than the mid-sized colleges. So they have a good argument to say we should be funded equally on a per-student basis. But if you funded them exactly equal, that wouldn't be fair based on economy of scale, and it would also eat up the entire budget. But they got a big bump. They also happen to be, you know, represented by the people that are at the very top of the food pyramid in Tallahassee. Those are their areas. So that's why we are most optimistic when our good friend and local leader, soon to be Senate President, not next year, but the 2 years after that. So meeting with Senator Boyd on Friday, and I know many of us have had conversations with him, so I'm confident. He's not in the chair yet, but one more year and then he's in it. So I think you're going to see some dramatic increases here in the future, but I don't know that it'll be this coming year either, because he's out there, but we'll keep working.
So the Fleet Force truck driving, we just house that money. That money is still appropriated from the state.
That's correct.
And they got a 33% increase. Is that because the focus on trades-related education now versus traditional public education or college education?
I would suspect, Dr. President,
yeah. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And remember, this program originated, at the peak of COVID, when we're trying to help the Florida economy recover, and there was such a shortage of truck drivers. I'll also note, though, by the way, that none of this budget is signed yet by the governor. Remember, it was such a protracted session this year. The fiscal year starts on 1 July, so the anticipation is he will sign before July 1st. We'll have lots of other issues to deal with. So I would say any of this could change.
Is this all veto possibility? Because I know you can veto something, but you can't veto.
That's other. Correct. He could either veto the entire budget, which I don't anticipate.
It's less than what he proposed.
Right. I don't know that he would do that. I don't have any reason to think he would do that. But I will highlight what he could veto in here from a line item perspective would be Fleet Force and the two appropriation projects. Those are always subject to veto by the governor, and they'll review them. And we're speaking to the governor's office already to defend these projects. That's normal course of business. Get it through the legislature, and then
let the governor sign, he'll sign up on the Fleet Force. I mean, he's very great folks right now.
He has been.
Message
yes.
I got from the state officials today was he
signed
on Monday.
Yep. All right.
All right.
But if he doesn't sign on Fleet Force, Trustee DiDomenico, just to finish the thought, if he didn't sign off on that, again, that $4 million doesn't come out of our budget. We get about $140,000 a year for rent. That's the impact on us.
I'll raise their rent.
Fair question.
So, in your book, on page 160, you'll see numbers that line up with what we have here. We're anticipating tuition fees to increase due to our enrollment increase, not due to any change in pricing. I want to point out to you support from local government here, that is your dual enrollment money that we were just talking about. It comes to us through the state government and the local government. State support is as we talked. And the total difference we're looking at in our lower division budget is about $1.9 million. So that's Fleet Force plus $617,000 and then some change.
Okay. And Julie?
Yes.
How confident are you of federal support going from 26 to 150,000 when they're tightening their belts? How do you come up with that number?
Well, it's a budgeted number, thinking that there are grants that are going to be available that we might do it. Might come to us through the state, and that's why it's in the revenue pot here. That's sort of budget nuts for us. We're going to talk for just a minute about the non-recurring financial plan. So we're expecting to spend about $11 million from unrestricted fund balances that we have. And we expect our fund balance to be somewhere around $19 million at the end of this month. So that will include a small fund balance in the nursing enhancement plan, $3 million in contingency for technology, salary enhancements, whatever the president needs and y'all decide. That'd be sure to cover the health insurance costs. And the nursing pipeline that we just want to talk about, so we can have to do it as well.
The loss of money in the nursing program, is that going to affect our ability to draft the same number of students? We have to.
Don't worry.
It won't impact the number of students that we're able to service through the program, but it may impact some of our services we're providing to the students. So it'll definitely impact our marketing budget for the nursing program. It will impact our ability to buy NCLEX, which is their registry exam prep materials for the students. It might postpone our ability to replace some of our equipment in the sim lab.
So our professors will stay where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
Are we still one or two short? Are we fully, you don't know.
I think,
Dr. Selma, are we fully staffed right now? We're hiring two more and then we'll be fully staffed.
Yeah. We're hiring two more and then we'll be fully staffed.
Are we hiring them? We
yes,
have contracts?
We have them ready to roll.
Okay, thank you.
So, we do plan to spend non-recurring funds. As you recall, in the September meeting, we're required to bring to you an actual non-recurring plan based on what the true fund balance is. And so you'll see that next month, or 2 months. Page 160, if you'll look at that, that's the unrestricted lower division. And you'll notice at the bottom of the page it says minus 5788, and it was because we have those fund balances that we're spending and commitments from our contingents. Page 161 is the upper division, upper level, and you'll see that we're expecting both revenue and expenses to go up. And by law, we have to balance those, or at least generate some balance for upper division as baccalaureate degrees. When the colleges were given the authority to grant baccalaureate degrees, they were given a small stipend of state money, $178,164, which I have memorized because it's been the same for 20 years. So beyond that, we have to live on what we earn, and we do that in this program. Fund 2 is all the grants and contracts that you'll see on the right half of the page, on page 160, 161, and then the following pages with collegiate schools on there. The student activities, we're going to estimate about $1.5 million in funding. Gifts and grants, we expect about $6.2. The collegiate school at Bradenton will bring in about $5. And the Venice Collegiate School, we expect will bring in $3 million. So when you total it all up, the budget for 25-26, revenues at 15.5, the expenditure is a little bit higher, and that's because there are some fund balances. And let me point out the differences look big here, and that's because some of the grant dollars were not budgeted at the beginning of last fiscal year, and so just to catch up the budget to it for the next year makes it look like it's good. Collegiate school, so you can see, they have a fund balance as well that they're using for staffing, as I recall. Is that right, Kelly? Yeah. There's Venice, you know that. And here's the reason you got the updated sheet, beg your pardon. We've got a lot of capital funds. We're going to start with a balance of about $36 million, add the new PICO dollars, the $9 million, and the $3.5 million some local funds for a total of $15 million in plant funds. We expect to spend about $15.5 million this coming year. That gets the Paris project underway. And at the end of that, you will probably have about $3,500 about that. Now, we don't have that cash in hand. As we get need for the funds, if it stays approved, we draw it down as we need it. So I'd love to be able to make interest on that, but it's not all in effect. That's your budget for next year. Now, this is the budget again that the governor's not signing, as I do, until Monday. So there may be some need for adjustments when you come back in September, but this will get you kicked off for the next year and allow you to move forward with expenditures.
The parish budgeting is not subject to line item veto, is that right?
It is
subject to it. Yeah. Okay.
And as is the business.
Right.
So I'm seeking approval of the 25-26 operating.
Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Are there questions or comments?
Comments. I'm not sure if I have a question. So if I understand this correctly, we have a $5.7 million deficit.
Yes.
And we're taking that from general, from our reserve fund loss one, which is $17 million, right?
$19 million.
So we basically knocked that down by 30-40%, something like that, 30%. So my question is, do we expect to see that? I know you got 13 days left, so I'm going to ask you, do we expect to see that rolling forward to the 2 to 3 years.
So whatever's left that we don't spend.
I don't think costs are going to go down.
You mean costs?
Right, and we already know where they're at. And there's other things we have to consider that are recurring that are not budgeted for.
Such as utility bill increases. We've learned that they're going to be 200,000 to 300,000.
So what do you think happens at the end when we have nothing to pull from? I mean, what does that look like? Because I'm kind of a newbie on this.
President Gregory has some thoughts on it, and I'll share mine.
My initial thoughts would be, of course,
because my term doesn't end by then, so I want to know what I have to face.
First, we are appropriately conservative in the way we budget. So we're at minus 5.8 million, right? So we should be concerned about that, running out of deficit, pulling out of Fund 1. But out of that 5.8, remember, 3 million of it is contingency. We don't have to spend it. We may not spend it, but if we want to do any, what's the right term, Steve? Salary one time?
I know. Incentive.
Incentive. We want to do any incentive payments like we did last year? That's where that comes out of. That's out of that $3 million and any other contingency plans. We could also, you know.
The computers are coming out of that, right?
The computers.
$1.1 million that the deferred.
Yes. Could come out of that money. The other thing is we're also appropriately conservative in the way we forecast. You saw the increases on state revenue from tuition and fees. That's based on a projection of a 5% bump in enrollment, which is great. We're thrilled with that. This summer, we're actually up 13%, and in the fall, it looks like we'll be up 8% or better. If that happens, that could that would translate into over another $1 million back into the fund, but we can't count on it. It's too soon to know for sure as students are signing up for classes whether or not that money's coming back. So, yes, negative 5.8, but I would say it's going to be more likely
2.5,
which is still a problem, but we have 19 million. We have much more than we have to have in Fund 1. By law, we have to have, what, 10 million?
5%, which is about 4.5.
Oh, really? We only have to have that amount. So, reading the tea leaves, I do wonder if, I do wonder if the state wants the colleges to spend down their Fund 1s.
Kind of thought that too, but
you know, I also hate to be penalized for being good fiscal stewards of our dollars over the years.
Any more than we already have been.
And we certainly, you know, for the reasons you already know, want to seek and obtain equitable funding by size for a variety of reasons. You know, starting with salaries, as we know from that chart. So what's going to happen? We have got to get more recurring dollars in the next 3-4 years. Have to. Anything to add to that, Julie?
No, I think it's a team project to get the money from the state, and I wish you all the best.
Not her problem.
Not her problem.
We persist in being in a very dubious position because the amount of money we can raise ourselves is so little compared to what it takes to run the company.
Right.
And we have no control over it. You know, I can't raise tuition, they won't let us. I'll have a raise of what? 13
years? Yep.
13 years may have been able to raise tuition. 13 years. I mean, it's very frustrating to sit in this chair, especially when you come from the business community. I couldn't live like this, you know. I just raise prices, but we can't. We're at complete beck and call of the state of Florida. Anyway, let's just whine about it. You want a motion?
Yes.
You got it.
So we already did.
You did the motion.
Oh, we
did the
motion.
We had a second.
Yeah. Okay.
How about I?
We were on discussion here. Okay, is there any other discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion
aye.
Passes.
Thank you all. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Jamie, that wasn't it. No, it wasn't.
No.
No, it was an aye.
Okay.
So,
just a bad aye.
For what? Understood. All right, Cassandra. We have the SCF Foundation update. Annual audit, 990.
We're at the finish line. Oh, I forgot. I'm sorry. Can I have a breath, one more thing?
Yes.
I'd like to introduce to you Ms. Jennifer Price. Jennifer Price, sitting behind you, is your new CFO. She comes to us from Ringland. She, I've been years with the Florida State University. And she has a CPA and a master's.
Hear that, Mark?
A CPA and a master's and bachelor's in accounting. So we're very
awesome.
Excited to have
you. Welcome aboard.
We're glad Jennifer Price is here. And, you know, the foundation has also enjoyed working with Ms. Julie J. Clay as well. I've certainly used her as a great counsel and mentor while being at this institution, and I really appreciate Julie's advice. So I'm going to turn it over to our 990 focus. That's on your page 179. And I just want to revisit our mission. And the one thing I want you to see in this mission is the word connect. That is what the foundation does. It's really the benchmark of our is being that connector to our great community, to our institution. So that's the one thing I want you to remember when you see our mission. Oops. I'd like to introduce Laura Cota. She did have to step out for a business phone call. She's in the insurance industry in the Lakewood Ranch community. And then we also have Jane Esbeck, our vice president of our board in the back. And she is a co-owner of Andrick and Associates. She's a Sarasota County resident, so we get the both of best of both worlds, someone, a leader from Manatee County as well as Sarasota County. And then she is a former executive with Hy-Vee Supermarkets, and they serve on many, many committees, and these are the three that they're most prominent on at the foundation. So some of those things that you think of when you look at our 990 and those accolades that we like to market when we go out into the community, you're going to see $2.5 million in scholarships to nearly 2,000 students. So we want to really convey that high impact. And we use the 990 to really showcase and create that transparency to our donors, our funders, and granting organizations, which include private and family foundations. You can see the $2.1 million in academic program enhancements. A lot of people scratch their head and they go, what's a program enhancement? That's equipment, that's capital projects, it's instructional support, it's everything and anything, but it's not a scholarship, okay? And so that's what the foundation does. Our fiscal year is different from the college's fiscal year. We go from October the 1st through September the 30th. And I don't really know why. That's just how I inherited the foundation. Okay? Here I'm asking you for a couple of things is a request for a motion. You can see in your board packet today, you will have the audit report and what that purpose of that particular document is for. And then you can see some of the purpose that we use for our IRS Form 990. And of course, the board is seeking your approval. They did approve these documents on June the 12th. Yes, sir.
Just a foundational question. The foundation itself is not a separate corporation.
We are a direct support organization of State College of Florida.
But is it independent from State College of Florida?
It's
a separate corporation. It's State College of Florida Foundation, Inc. It files
I'm just trying to understand because I sit on other boards.
It's a DSO, a direct support organization that has to provide a certain kind of support to the college to maintain its tax exemption.
Okay. But doesn't that board have full authority to approve the 990 and audits and so on and so forth independently from us?
They're required to approve them, but by statute, so is the Board of Trustees.
So that's why I'm here tonight. This is something we've done annually, and then there is a checklist that the board chair of the trustees and the president of the college will sign today, depending upon your motion to proceed. And then I file that with the Department of Education, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's about six particular entities that today's date will trigger. Our deadline for those is August 1st.
I have, are we allowed to ask questions?
Yep.
Yes,
Two, maybe three questions. On page 171, I'm curious, it says a change in value of annuities payable, a negative $3.7 million. I'm curious what that is. That's okay to get back to me.
We have multiple annuities, so those are, some of those are assets held in trust and other entities, so I have to see specifically which one to give.
I'd love to geek out on
that
with you.
I can geek out with you, but I would need
another Julie. Okay. The other question I have was the audit did have a finding. We'd be remiss without just confirming. It says there were 80 entries that were performed, or that were, 87 that were journal entries to correct prior balances. 80 was a result of audit procedures, but seven were prepared by outsourced contract accountants.
The foundation did have 87 adjusting journal entries. That is highly unusual. Mm-hmm. The most you typically find in an audit are around 5 at the most. Mm-hmm. So this is very, very unusual. We did hire, due to a long-term absence of our accountant, we did have to hire outside consulting services from Kirkreen and Barbario. Our auditor is Malden and Jenkins, so we did want a level of separation between the firms, and then we were able to complete our audit in about 2.5 weeks.
So were the 7 that were done was through KB?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Right. And I assumed everything is, like, the procedures and internal controls have been prepared.
Yes, we are buttoning that down, and Julie and Jennifer Price and I, we are restructuring the foundation's accounting office. And so we currently have a advertised position. If any of you know of anyone that would like to work at a wonderful foundation, we have a director of foundation financial services position that is advertised on our employment website. So if you know of someone that would be interested in working for a top-tier charity, please ask them to apply.
I'll just add, Trustee Fuller and I have been briefed well into the weeds on this. Those 87 entries and the other 7 are administrative errors. And then you make an error to correct an error, then you make an error So 87 makes it sound like there were 87.
I just want to make sure the more hands you have in a bookkeeper's pot, the more errors there will be. So when I noticed the outsourced contract accountant, I just wanted to make sure that, like, we mitigated how many hands are in the pot.
Yeah.
And then I think I just wanted it on record that the board did review that.
Mm-hmm.
And
they did.
Were aware, like our board.
Absolutely.
Where. So that was all.
I also want to share that the foundation and working, you know, with us and CFO's office have decided organizationally to change the structure, including the position that Cassandra just mentioned. But as long as Julie's been here, it hasn't been the way that we've operated, that the CFO had any insight or oversight, our CFO, into the foundation's accounting. We're changing that. That's Julie's suggestion. That's Jennifer, the incoming suggestion. And we've also, you know, we figured out one of the obvious errors. We only had a single point of failure in the foundation. We had one person that was responsible for all the journal entries, all the accounting pieces. So that's why there's a position being hired. There will be two there and the additional oversight of the CFO so we can avoid that problem.
And our new CFO has a foundation experience.
Yeah. All right, can we do these both in one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, is there a motion to approve the audit in the Form 990?
So moved.
Second.
Any more questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion passes.
Thank you.
All right, that leads us to old business. Is there any old business to come before the board? Seeing none, there's new business, and I understand Chris has, Chris, yes, new chair, sorry, old thinking.
This is for contract approval for disaster recovery and remediation services. The college recommends approval by the Board of Trustees for the contract with Belfour Property Restorations and BMS CAT LLC to provide disaster recovery and remediation services. These agreements result from a solicitation created in collaboration with the Florida College System Risk Management Consortium for the benefit of the 28 colleges in the Florida College System. The intent of the RFP establishes an indefinite quantity disaster recovery and remediation services contract in accordance with Federal Emergency Management Agency FEMA requirements for use by the consortium member colleges on an as-needed basis. Resulting from catastrophic events and declared emergencies and disasters. An intent to award has been issued by Santa Fe College and contracts will be approved by the Santa Fe Board of Trustees at the June 2025 meeting, which it was approved. Upon approval, SCF will enter into agreement with both vendors. So looking for board approval to be able to execute a contract with both Belfour and BMS CAT for disaster recovery and remediation.
So second.
Okay. And this helps us to spin up all sorts of extra resources following a hurricane, for instance.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Is there any questions or comments?
No.
I do have a question. What's Santa Fe College?
Thank you. I was like, what is that? Yeah, but what does that have to do with
that? What does that have to do with Belfour?
They just took the lead with the consortium to write the RFP to advertise, solicit, set up a committee, go through the whole award process, and then with the ability for the other colleges to piggyback off that. Because there's only a few companies in the country that have the horsepower to be able to support and at a beck and call. So instead of 28 colleges all going through separate solicitations, it was smart to go ahead and just have one entity set up the agreement with the ability.
So they handle it all.
Yes.
All the RFPs work.
The pricing, the negotiation. Right.
And we pay a fee to them to do that, right? Or is that covered?
I'm not aware of any fee that we've had to pay. Yeah, we're just going to piggyback off of it.
But it's the Canes, though.
Well, they're
on your way to Tallahassee. It is a very solid agreement.
Just have to pass through.
I can't stop.
One more egg.
Okay. Right. Taylor, did you have a question?
No, that was the same question.
Yeah, okay. All right, any other questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion passes. Is there any other new business from any trustees to bring before the board? Board comments. Let's start with you, Mark.
It has been my honor and privilege to work with Julie. She's taken me under her wing and helped me many, many times, many phone calls, and I miss her terribly. I wish her all the happiness and retirement and Have fun.
Thank you.
Go Kentucky. Same sentiments. I only worked with you for like 6 months, so I can tell you had things buttoned up very well. I appreciate your knowledge and the history that you have here, and I'm sure you pass as much of that along as possible to your successor.
So everybody has my cell phone.
Congratulations. And a second comment is, you know, the concern about the budget, and I know we have what I used to call in the business world a little sandbagging going on, but it's not anything drastic. So, you know, operating at a loss just kind of gives me the willies. You know, even in public entities, you try to balance your sources of funds and your expenses, and it's just not usual to have red. And I don't see it changing. So it's going to be this way for some time. So I've asked President Gregory how I could help, and you know, I'm sure he'll utilize that, but he's got plenty of horsepower. I just don't see, I just see the public, the state college system a little discombobulated at a higher level. I know there's an open visit. There is an entity that controls it, but it just seems doesn't seem like it's just as structured as some other state-run entities. So, but I'll work with it and try to help as much as I can. I just have concerns about the fiscal state right now. And I think a lot of this reserve is accumulation of a lot of good years.
Right. Because it does cycle around like this. And I know I've been involved with governments in the past that had that mandatory minimum that you had to have in a reserve fund, and they would struggle to get it to that, and we're at like four times that. But whenever you go down, it's not a great feeling in the stomach, you know, going down. But we do have an awfully large cushion. It could cycle back. I think it could change as far as funding for the state college system in the coming few years, because you get different leadership. You have the influence of people like this and others around the state. I think it could change. It's not a sexy funding ask ever, and so that makes it always a little bit harder. But I think that there is the potential for it. And if it doesn't, and it keeps going down, I have no doubt that this board and this leadership will just stop and will live within our means, whatever that is, and we won't go below. We won't get down to 4.5. I mean, if I'm sitting here, we won't get down to 4.5. We would stop it way before that and just figure out where we have to cut instead.
So we're already doing that.
We've been doing that. Yeah.
All right. That's the end of my comments.
Yeah, it's hard for the businessman that can't control the revenue side.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, very unusual.
Frustrating.
Yeah, agreed. I just wanted to thank Heather for your presentation, because it is very helpful. There's a lot of moving parts. So, okay, dual enrollment, okay, we've got collegiate school, how do they all kind of play in? And you did a very good job presenting it, so thank you for all you do, and Kelly as well, and I appreciate it.
Good.
Oh, a couple things. Thank you, Julie, for your service and for never making me feel like any question I ask is stupid. So I really appreciate that. It dawned on me, I'm curious where the revenue from the SCF camps go. Which bucket? Anybody know?
Other.
I say revenue because I can't imagine we're making money off
of
it. Yeah. It's a fundraiser. But I do want to commend all the people that are part of the camp. My son is greatly enjoying it. And last year he went for 1 week, and this year he begged to do 2 weeks. So maybe next year we'll do 3 weeks. But I highly recommend. He comes home really excited every day. So I appreciate
it. Thanks. All right.
Julie, thank you. Appreciate it. It's been fun. Maybe you want to take a crack at the budget, you know, tomorrow. That's awful. No, also my son is a culprit of the collegiate school here, and I just, you know, for those who don't have kids, that don't, if you don't know kids that have been through it, it's amazing. I'm just a benefactor of my son going through collegiate school. So huge kudos to the collegiate school and the dual enrollment product. We did it. We love it. Just proud of Tommy's direction. I mean, we did get money from the state, so something to look forward to a little bit. And it is a positive step in the right direction. I think we're on the right direction with a lot of things. Kudos to, of course, you know, I'm an athletic guy. So Nick's doing a great job with athletics. I know to be able to add a sport is a big deal. And so I'm really proud of that. And for facilities, doing a hell of a job. Getting everything, you know, we've done a lot of improvements, and so kudos to you for that too. So I want to make a point, because I don't think facilities gets enough credit for some of the things, those dugouts and some of the things that we've been doing in the gym. Those are big time things that we had to get done, and they did it. So I appreciate that, and I still want to see the cement canoe. I'd like maybe a request next week or next 3 months, 2 months, whatever. We have a pool in here. Maybe he can bring the cement canoe. We can float it maybe. See, you know, I'd like to see that.
That's not in the budget.
So anyway, so appreciate it.
All right. And then obviously I would echo everything with Julie. I've been on the board for 8 years. And the problem with having somebody as competent and that somebody you get some confidence in is I kind of coast on some of the stuff that I'm supposed to be probably overseeing a little more. I mean, you're looking at the bottom line numbers, but the reality is that she's been so good and knowledgeable and, you know, generous with her time and knowledge and be a huge loss, but this is part of life. Loss is part of life, the philosopher says. So, anyway, really, that's it. You know. The other thing I would say is that on our funding situation, there was never any guarantee when or how much of the parish funding we would get in these last couple of years, and this year particularly when, you know, the budget is actually being diminished overall. And to get that level of funding on the parish funding is a huge win for us. It doesn't help the operating side. Actually, it could add to the challenges of the operating side.
But it's going to add big benefits for the future. Parish is going to be a massive campus.
It's going to be so huge. I mean, I have
to fund it.
I have family up there,
it's gonna
and
fund
they,
us later.
They're frustrated that the oldest kids are going to be too old, you know, because they're like 4 minutes away from this field that they've been sitting there. And as you said, they were going on and said, I know, it's got to do with government and then government. And I don't know what to tell you. It takes a while. But anyway, getting that funding, I thought, is huge to get that. So we've had wins and we've had losses, but I think there's some good news there, and that's all I have. And with that, meeting adjourned.